Hey.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.
Another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio. I've been gone for a little bit, off on my nationwide tour of the co-certified app, demonstrating it at various locations. I was at the Detroit, Michigan, at the Martin Luther King Center for the Chronically Criminally Insane, or something like that. I had a better line than that. And I'm here today with Mark Collin. Mark, was am I on top of my game, or am I missing a step here?
You're always on top of your game, Patrick, and you especially. I've got to congratulate you. Last week on my show, where we had the wonderful, the beautiful, the erudite, the intelligent, and the very witty Syrian girl on, you were certainly on top of your game. On that show, you were absolutely superb. I was very, very happy that you managed to make a little hole in your schedule in order to come back on, because originally you were like, oh, you couldn't do the show. And I was a bit disappointed about that, because I thought Syrian Girl was just the perfect kind of guest for you, actually, the perfect kind of guest for you to interact with. So when you actually could make it on, that was superb, and that show, you were absolutely brilliant.
Well, yeah, and she was the perfect guest, and after you hung up and Jason hung up, Syrian Girl and I stayed on for another half hour talking, and she will be on this show at some point in the future.
Oh, excellent. I mean, that's pretty incredible, because where it was with her, I mean, at that time, it's 7 p.m. my time, ends at 9 p.m., so it's about tolerable for me, but she had to get up because it started at 2 a.m. for her and finished at 4 a.m., and I've got to hand it to her. She's one incredible lady, because it takes me a Red Bull to stay on form starting at 7 p.m., but she managed to get through 2 hours starting at 2 a.m. and finishing at 4 a.m. on just a bottle of water. So she's certainly a live wire, and gave an absolutely incredible account of herself.
Yeah. And then this week you've got Jazz Hands McFeels will be the guest. And because he also is sponsored by CoCertified, I've been trying to figure out how to tie all that in. So we'll see how that goes.
I'm really looking forward to that show. When Jazz Hands comes on, I think that's the last of the really big named people that I'm looking forward to having on. It sort of completes my kind of dream team of show guests.
Yeah, all within the first 100. Because you're coming up on episode 100 in a couple of weeks, right?
Yes, but this was for me. Jazz Hands was somebody I've wanted on from before episode 50, in fact. Right back when we used to have Bree on, in fact. Bree was talking about how great it would be to have Jazz Hands on. And obviously I agreed. So to finally get him, it's something I'm very, very, very happy about.
Yeah, no, it's one of the big perks of doing that show with you is getting exposure or being exposed to all of these well-known people, various well-known people. And you do a great job getting all these different guests. Oh, by the way, a few weeks ago you had Mike Enoch, also of the Right Stuff Network, which Jazz Hands McFeels is on the Right Stuff Network. And I'm not exactly sure when this is going to happen, but I have heard through the grapevine that our own Jeremy from Kentucky is going to be doing an interview with Mike Enoch, and so we'll look forward to that. When the scheduling is public, I will let my listeners know, because that would be a very interesting interview. Anyway, so I was on my nationwide tour for the Co-Certified app, and I'm back now. And so there's been was on a couple of those shows that had pre-recorded, but now we're almost live. We're pre-recording this an hour before showtime. But I haven't had a chance to weigh in on a bunch of things, and there's been a lot that happened last week. And of course, I was just appalled to hear about the fire in Notre Dame, and of course, the spire has been destroyed, the roof's been destroyed. It could have been worse, but we've got the. But there's enough so that things can be rebuilt. But are they going to be restored? Will they simply be rebuilt, or will they be restored? Is this an opportunity? Well, there's a lot. Because you're over there, and there's a lot that was weird. So one thing that was weird was while the fire was still going on, and obviously fire marshals weren't able to go in and inspect what might have been the cause of the fire. They were already announcing, oh, it was just an accident. No, it wasn't terrorism. It was just an accident. It seemed a little bit hasty. So that was kind of strange. And then, of course, soliciting funds from all of these millionaires to rebuild what is basically a cathedral to Western civilization, one of the our greatest historical artifacts, and it's going to be rebuilt. And are these billionaires going to be able to dictate the new design? Why would there be a new design? So, what have you heard, and what do you think about this?
Well, obviously, I think it's extremely sad. I mean, this isn't just a loss to Christians. This is a huge loss to all Europeans, because Notre Dame Cathedral and its outstanding beauty was a European icon. It wasn't just a Christian icon, it was a European icon. It was something that summed up the architectural and artistic magnificence that our people, that was birthed from our people, and that represents our people. It represents our people's spirit. And to lose something of such incredible beauty and historical importance is greatly, greatly saddening. Now, I too thought it was very strange indeed that before the fires had even gone out, the papers were calling it a tragic accident. I know for a fact that had this been a mosque in Europe that had gone up in flames, I'm pretty sure the newspapers would have been asking, is this a hate crime? Is this an act of arson? But I do think, in this case, despite their very early proclamation that it was an accident, I do believe it was an accident. And the reason I believe it was an accident, and I do have good reason for stating that, is because if this was a Muslim who had done this, if this was basically they would be the ones who were doing it. If this was an act of terrorism, it would have been a Muslim. And usually speaking, if a Muslim had set fire to a historic site like a church, I think they would have probably, after setting the blaze, gone on a rampage as well in order to get killed. Because you have to understand these suicide bombers, you have to understand these jihadists to try and be able to combat them. And it's also good just to generally understand their mindset, or try to understand their mindset, so you can understand the way they operate. Now, if they don't die during their attack, they don't get the goodies, so to speak. The idea is that anyone who dies waging jihad against the infidel and dies during that is essentially what is akin to a martyr in Christian terminology. And when they die, they go to heaven and they're bequeathed 70 virgin brides. Essentially, they go to
their version of heaven, and they live almost like, if you like, an Islamic version of Hugh Hefner. They get their 70 brides, they get their giant castle or fortress or mansion where they live with these 70 beautiful women, and they live like that for eternity, for waging jihad on the non-believer. Now, that does involve dying, though, and they look forward to that death. It's not something, they're not doing this from the point of view of somebody fighting a war. Now, if you're fighting a war, you want to retain your most fanatical soldiers. You want to lose as few of your soldiers whilst the enemy loses as many as possible of their own. But in Islam, it doesn't work that way. They're not fighting it in that sense. And that's a very curious thing about Islam, which we can actually talk about if you wish in a few moments. We can talk about why Islam is set up that way and how it operates on that basis. But I believe if it was a Muslim who had done this, I think they would have killed themselves in the process. They would have set the fire ablaze. They'd have come storming out of the main doors of the cathedral or out of a door of the cathedral. They would have then opened fire or attacked with a knife or done something to either kill more people, stop firefighters or decent people entering the building who were going in to save the either structure of the building or relics therein, and they would have gone out in what they would have believed to be a blaze of glory so that they could claim their bounty. And I think that's something, I mean, this weekend has been absolutely horrific. I mean, if you remember a month or so back, the news was all about a guy called Brenton Tarrant in New Zealand who killed 50 people at a mosque, and we didn't hear the end of that. It was almost made as if it was, you know, the world's largest terrorist attack, as if it was the most important, most common event you would see, and that white nationalists were the real threat to world peace. Yet this weekend, this Easter, the holiest weekend in the Christian calendar, we have seen one of the largest and most coordinated and horrific terrorist attacks ever seen in Sri Lanka, where hotels and churches were attacked indiscriminately by Muslim suicide bombers who have killed hundreds. I think the death toll is now well over 200, and they have maimed and injured in the region of 500. But again, all of those taking part in these atrocities killed themselves in the onslaught. They killed themselves in the attacks in order to claim their, what they feel will be their prize at the end.
Yeah. Well, I mean, obviously there's a lot of that, and that fuels suicide bombings, for instance. You know, when you say suicide bomber, you've got pretty strong odds that it's a Muslim suicide bomber. I guess there are others, but so there's certainly a lot of that, and you do sometimes have scaffolding or other things, cats fire during renovations. This type of thing can happen, so it's certainly a possibility. And I don't have a position. I don't know what happened there. There is a some sort of security cam video that's circulating around, and I don't know what the source of this is. And it shows what seems to be kind of a shadowy figure on the roof, and a flash. But it's also the type of thing that the video would be simple enough that I think I could even Photoshop something like that. So it's certainly not conclusive. But I want to raise some other examples, though. You had these 6th century Buddhist statues in Afghanistan, which in 2001, about half a year before 9/11, the Taliban, which was in charge of Afghanistan at the time, blew them up. And they didn't blow them up in order to get virgins. The people who blew them up, I mean, it was in Afghanistan, they simply did it. And you think of the ISIS smashing ancient pre-Muslim statues in, I guess it was the Mosul Museum, and you think of them bombing the Roman era remains in Palmyra in Syria. You think of the I guess it was an African version of ISIS that burned the library at Timbuktu. And these weren't suicide missions. So I don't know. I'm agnostic and open-minded. I don't know what happened with this, but yeah.
No, you make a very good point. However, the other thing that I do believe this would have been a suicide attack had this been Muslims, simply for the reason that the outpouring of sympathy, sadness, and anger over this was huge. And had it been a Muslim group, I think they would have wanted to make it very clear it was them, and they would have wanted to take all credit for it. And as of yet, not a single Muslim group has taken credit for it. Now, Muslims in France now make up a sizable population, and Islam has been rapidly spreading across France. And I think had Muslims done this, and had they done it, they would have definitely claimed it. But had they done it and claimed it, I think you could well have seen a huge and unprecedented backlash. I think it would have been the kind of event that would have led to there being a huge pushback. I think you could have seen retaliatory attacks at mosques. I think you could have seen Muslims being attacked in the streets. And I think, for once, you would have seen a real outpouring of rage. Because, strangely enough, when we've seen terrorist attacks in the past, there hasn't been that outpouring of rage or sadness. But I think in this case, I saw more genuine upset, more genuine heartache, more anger over this than I have over actual terrorist attacks that have led to people dying. And I think looking at this, you can actually see this got under the European people who saw this and were very, very deeply moved, very, very upset. And that's reflected not just in the way people have reacted to it, both in public and on social networks, but also in the outpouring of money that's been raised for this, for the rebuilding of Notre Dame, for the rebuilding of the spire and the rebuilding of the cathedral as a whole. And I think when you see something like this, had this been Muslims who wanted to create some kind of great schism in society that would have led to an increasing or ratcheting up of tension, I think this would have been more of a pressure point than anything else they'd done before.
Mm-hmm. And now in France, this is something I wasn't aware of until after the Notre Dame attack, but there has been, over the past several months, quite a number of attacks on churches. So I've got up an article from Newsweek magazine, not necessarily known as an alt-right or white supremacist outlet, and Newsweek magazine. And this is from March 21st, so clearly before the Notre Dame attack. And the headline is, Catholic churches are being desecrated across France. And officials don't know why. So, you know, it's not officially Muslims who are doing it. I was looking through the article. I want to read from it. It's crashing because I brought up Newsweek. Newsweek does that. It's a horrible website. Okay, and we had a little technical difficulty there. I was trying to read from this article and called up Newsweek. I don't recommend anybody ever look at Newsweek for anything ever. But the article started off, France has seen a spate of attacks against Catholic churches since the start of the year. Vandalism that has included arson and desecration. Vandals have smashed statues, knocked down tabernacles, scattered or destroyed the Eucharist, and torn down crosses, sparking fears of a rise in anti-Catholic sentiment in the country. Last Sunday, the historic Church of Saint-Sulpice in Paris was set on fire just after midday mass on Sunday, Le Parisien reported, although no one was injured. Police are still investigating the attack, which firefighters have confidently attributed to arson. And so it goes on. But that doesn't necessarily mean Notre Dame is arson. But there has been a lot of this. So we're about to go off the break, but when we come back from break, I'd like your thoughts on all of this.
Or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2 today.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
When your doctor tells you you have bad cholesterol or blockages in the arteries, what do you do? When diet and exercise is not enough, we try medications and hope for the best. For the last 2 decades, I have been telling people about a natural method to help solve these problems and more. Extendivite can help maintain cardiovascular health and lower blood lipid levels in adults. The 7 herbs in Extendivite are known to work together synergistically to get the results we hope for. There are many testimonials on Extendivite's effect on circulatory-related ailments. Get Extendivite today to start your journey back to a healthier life. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or see us on amazon.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Do you know there is an ongoing war right here in America? Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Are back. And so, Mark, your thoughts on the rise in anti-Catholic arson and vandalism in France?
Well, this could well be linked to Islam. It could well be linked to migrants.
Even Antifa, honestly, right?
No.
Even Antifa.
But it could be far-left groups. Mm-hmm. This could be leftist groups. It could be people who are anti-white, anti-Christian. I mean, I know in Sweden, was it Sweden or Sweden, Denmark or Norway, at least one of those countries, they had a number of church burnings which were carried out by militant pagans. So that is certainly something that has happened in European countries. Now, I would say, if I was going to put my money on it, I would think it would be migrants. I would think it would be people who were not of European descent. And I think they would be targeting these wonderful places for ideological reasons. The only thing is, I know some people might think I'm sort of dodging this or cucking, but I genuinely don't like to give a hard and fast opinion on something unless I'm 100% sure. Or, you know, 99.9% sure, should I say, that something is definitely the case. I don't want to be that guy. And when I say that guy, the person who declares something to be the absolute untruth of the matter, only to be somewhat humiliated a little bit later down the line. You know the kind of person I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Not only would it be bad for me, but it would also be bad for the movement as a whole. I think there's enough terrible things happening to our people by those who aren't of European descent or those who are viciously anti-white without us sort of, you know, adding to that or feeling the need to, make things up or push things in a certain direction for ideological reasons. And whilst I do think it is perfectly and absolutely likely that this is most likely being done by people who are either anti-white or non-white, if I can't say for sure, and I certainly can't say for sure with Notre Dame, I don't really want to make that call. But one thing I do want to say with the issue of the suicide bombings is Islam as a religion is set up in this way. Islam is very curious in that it's structured to essentially lead to a situation of permanent and or perpetual warfare. And you think, well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean permanent and perpetual warfare? Well, when you actually look at Islam as a religion, it's one where they allow polygamy. They allow a man to take, multiple wives. Well, that doesn't actually build stable societies. That isn't something that builds stable, good, healthy societies, because stable, good, healthy societies are naturally ones where, nigh on 50% of the population are male and 50% of the population are female. And as you will know, most males and most females will then pair off to form family units and to reproduce. Now, if, and this is a huge if, a male can take more than one wife, that means there is another male who lacks a wife. And in some Islamic societies where men can have, four, five, six, seven wives, well, that's a significant percent of the male population who then doesn't get a wife. Well, that naturally would cause a situation where there was an awful lot of resentment, an awful lot of dislike by a large portion of the male population for the men who have wives. Because for every man who has, two or more wives, there is at least one man not getting a wife. And that would lead to huge instability. And the only way a society could basically function if men were to regularly take more than one wife is for those societies to be ones of war and conquest. And you have to remember, every time a man blows himself up as a suicide bomber, he alleviates that problem. Every time a country is attacked, or every time a nation is invaded, hundreds of thousands of the invading troops will perish in those attacks, which again alleviates the problem. And also, when Muslims invade countries, they kill, hundreds of thousands of the native men, the defenders.
In other words, it's women. It sounds as if you're making kind of a theoretical case for Islam and polygamy feeding into a more violent, more warlike culture.
Well, it's the only way it works, Patrick. It's the only way it works. You can't have polygamy in a stable and healthy society. I'll give you an example of this. There are certain fundamentalist Mormon groups in America that, although they don't practice polygamy in a legal manner, they do still practice it.
Yeah. By the way, we're coming up on the break, and I want you to have plenty of time to talk about this. So let's listen to that on the other side of the break.
Excellent.
Thank you. are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
We are back. So, about this polygamy, which is still practiced in Utah, not legally, but it is still practiced by some Mormons in Utah. So, what about this?
Well, these Mormons, they create these closed communities of fundamentalist Mormons. And they are closed communities because there may be, I mean, let's just pluck a number out there, there may be 100 families in some of these communities. And what you will tend to find is the older, more powerful leaders of the group, of the community, will see young, beautiful women coming of age. You know, they'll see girls who are coming of age. They will soon be able to marry these girls. These girls will be sort of, you know, 17, 18, 19 years old. And these older men, these community leaders, these preachers, people, men quite high up the totem pole, so to speak, in their community, will look at these young girls and say, oh, she'd be a wonderful and very beautiful addition to my my family. And these older men then want to take the young woman as a member of the family. But whereas it is natural for younger women to want to go with older men, but it's not particularly it's not particularly natural for someone who's, you know, just turning 18 to want to date a man who is in his 40s or 50s. That would be seen as maybe slightly undesirable for her. And often she will fancy a guy of her age. She will have desires on a young man who may be, you know, 19 or 20, who's quite dashing, in great shape, he's funny, you know, he's known her for some years and she has a crush on him. And she'll be like, well, actually, I don't want to date the leader of this group. I don't want to date this sort of older personality in our group. I would very much like to actually date this young man. You know, that's who I like. That's who I desire. But this is a conflict within their society. And as it is a closed society, as it's a group that isn't conquering, and young people aren't dying through warfare or any form of sort of military attrition, you have this problem where there's all these, you know, young men who are coming of age, who obviously have natural urges. They want to date the young women in the group. They want to have their own families. They want to, you know, pursue their own role in the community by having a family and carrying on their lineage. And they want to do it with the women that they are attracted to, who are attracted to them. But this creates, as I said, this conflict. And when this conflict occurs, you often have a large number of young men expelled from these communities. They are thrown out, and they're usually thrown out for very, very sort of spurious reasons. Reasons that, you know, you straight away see it's an excuse for getting rid of people, and they will get rid of them because they'll state they have somehow sinned or gone against the community or gone against God. And this young man who the pretty young girl was attracted to and wanted to date or pursue some kind of relationship with, he will be thrown out of the community and essentially shunned and just, you know, done away with, so to speak, because obviously they can carry out polygamy illegally, but they can't start executing people or putting them to death. So there's no way to get rid of him other than throwing him out. And this creates this imbalance within these communities where you have several powerful men with lots of, you know, younger, very attractive women, but then all these younger men who aren't that high up on the totem pole, who aren't the sons of powerful men, but are just part of the community, they have to go somewhere, and that means they're got rid of, they're out of the community. Whereas with Islam, and that's when you see a stable society, that's when you see a stable society trying to practice polygamy. But with Islam, Islam has only, in fact, I can't really say it's been reformed, because it hasn't. Islam has never had any reformation, and it's never had any great period of peace. It's a religion which has constantly been at war. It's constantly been invading. It's constantly been having these huge military crusades into other lands. And you're still seeing this today with groups like ISIS. You're still seeing Islamic conquest in places like Syria. You're seeing it in places like Iraq. You're seeing it now in Libya. And when these places are invaded by extreme Islamic groups, you see exactly what I'm talking about. You see a natural attrition of the Islamic fighters. You see a huge number of the native defenders killed. And this leaves women on both sides of the divide without husbands. So the surviving men are then given the pick of the litter, so to speak. They can take as many wives as they want because there's all these free women. And of course, that also aids with the spread of Islam. Because when there's a large number of women attributed to a few men, and those men are essentially conquering warriors, that is a very, very quick way to subjugate a population and to ensure that the next generation are brought up loyal to the invaders rather than essentially building their own resistance and holding on to some idea of setting their nation free at some point.
Very interesting. You know, I want to actually move on to the yellow vests, but there's one comment I want to make, and you might want to respond to it. Islam is not a racial movement. You know, Judaism has a very racial component to it. because Jewish children can only come out of Jewish wombs, whereas you know, the Islam, they're, you know, the, when they're conquering, they're taking the women, or they're even spreading the religion through non-genetic means. And the, actually, the most populous Islamic country on earth is, or Muslim country, is Indonesia, and the Indonesians are not Arabs. And so there is, there may well be kind of a genetic or racial component to Islam, but it's primarily an ideology, and it's an ideology that's been very successful in reproducing and spreading itself. What do you think of that? Like,
there's very interesting historical sort of precedent that goes along with this. Islam is not a race; it is a religion. It's a theology, and because of that, you do see a change in the genetics of Muslim of invading communities. And one notable example of this was in Spain. When Spain was under Islamic rule, it was known as Al-Andalus, and in Al-Andalus, obviously the native people were Spaniards, and the powerful Muslim men obviously took the most beautiful women from the population. Well, the most beautiful women were young Spanish girls with very fair features, usually blonde hair, blue eyes, and the Muslim conquerors coveted those women. They wanted those women. So you would see a powerful Muslim man who had played a role in the conquest of Spain with six or seven wives, and they would be very, very beautiful young European girls. Now, he would then have children with them, and those children would, some of them would have more in common with their mother than they did with their father. And you started to see in Muslim-occupied Spain the children of the conquering Muslims slowly become more and more European and bear less in common with the actual invading army than they did, have less in common with the invading army and more in common with Europeans, racially speaking. And that's an example of that. I mean, obviously, they were still brought up under Islamic rule. They were still brought up, you know, with their, you know, under Islamic teachings, but the race of them did not matter to the Muslims. All that mattered was that they took the most beautiful women, they bred with the most beautiful women, and their children were brought up under Islamic rule. However, obviously, that is not the same as when you talk about, say, Judaism. When you talk about, you know, Jews, that is, there is a huge racial component to that. The fact is, you only have to do a DNA test to see that Jewish comes up on a DNA test. And Jewish genes are generally seen to be passed down on the mother's side, meaning that if you are a man of Jewish descent and you want to have children which are seen as Jewish, you must be with a woman who is also of Jewish descent. And there is a racial aspect to this. There is definitely the idea amongst Jews to preserve that racial characteristic and to be with their own, but that isn't seen in Islam. Islam does not have that concept, and it spreads itself in a much more conquering and militaristic manner.
Mm-hmm. Okay, one more quick and flippant question before moving on to the yellow vests. What if all the English people, all the British people, just said, okay, we're going to convert to Islam? Do you think that would solve your immigration problem, that the Muslims would start saying, okay, well, we don't need to flood Britain anymore, we've conquered there, let's move on to the next place?
Oh, I think that wouldn't, I don't think that would solve a single thing. I do, however, think that it would be interesting in the fact, though, that with there being two strands of Islam, Sunni and Shiite, that is another major aspect of this conquest that I talk of. Because even when Muslims aren't conquering the land of the infidel, so to speak, they are often trying to conquer lands of the opposing Islamic sect. Mm-hmm. And that's what you see mm-hmm. in places like
Syria.
Iraq, because of Iraq and Syria, because yeah. obviously Syria is a Shiite Muslim area. Iran is Shiite, mm-hmm. but ISIS are Sunni. Mm-hmm. So ISIS are, you know, making their way through Shiite-owned areas. And that was actually one of the reasons for the rise of ISIS in Iraq. Mm-hmm. Because Iraq is a nation where there is, I believe, it's a Sunni majority.
No, it's a Shiite majority, but it had a Sunni ruling class.
It had a Sunni ruling class.
It had a Sunni ruling class.
Because wasn't there a huge over-representation by Shiites in the new Iraqi government?
And it has a Shiite majority. Saddam Hussein was secular, but he was Sunni, and his government was overrepresented with Sunni and Christian at the expense of Shiite. Now, in Syria, it's kind of the mirror image. Syria is majority Sunni, but has an Alawite. Alawites are a sect that's very close to Shiites, and they're basically allies. So it had a Sunni majority, but largely Alawite and Christian ruling class.
No, I'm not talking about Saddam Hussein. I'm talking about
Post Saddam Hussein, there was largely a purge of Sunnis. So they were probably underrepresented, even though they were a minority, but still probably underrepresented.
Yeah, and because of that, that was always credited as one of the reasons for the rise in ISIS. I mean, what you have to remember as well is ISIS gained so much ground so quickly across Iraq, it couldn't have done so without a certain degree of support on the ground. There were obviously a certain number of people in Iraq who were obviously supportive of these Sunnis. And also, I think something that obviously led to the rise of ISIS was clearly resentment against American and British occupying forces as well. That's mm-hmm. something that can never be underestimated.
Right. Okay, so regarding the Yellow Vest, so since late last autumn, there's been this Yellow Vest movement, which was initially provoked by a hike in the gasoline tax or gasoline prices. But it's become a very interesting force, and you probably know more about it than myself. It isn't overtly nationalist, but there is some sort of nationalistic undercurrent there that the Macron government certainly wants to keep a lid on, and they are responding in some way or reacting to Notre Dame. So is there much you can tell us about that?
Actually, and I'm really sad to say this, there isn't. I do know the protests are still going strong. And I do know as well that not only are the protests going strong, but the media are ignoring much of the protest. I see a lot of footage on Twitter, on social networks, showing these huge protests, which have continued. Now, this is big because this started before Christmas last year. Now, obviously, we're into April now. So, you know, if you just take a calendar month as being 4 weeks, and it isn't, it's slightly longer. But if you take a calendar month of 4 weeks, you know, considering this started before Christmas, you've had well over 20 weeks of these protests. Now, usually, when you see protests in the West, like you saw the protests over Brexit, people, you know, going to the Capitol and saying, look, we voted to leave, we want to leave. That would be one big weekend. And it's the same in Germany. You've seen, you know, very large-scale protests in Germany, but they tend to be one-off events. However, these protests in France are very, very different because they're just not stopping. They are just going and going and going. And I think that is very, very, you know, unique to the French, and it shows this revolutionary mindset that the French have had throughout history. And I think I'm not sure what their take is on the Notre Dame Cathedral, but I think if Macron does what I think he's going to do, because he's saying that he's holding the redesign, because they're not talking now about rebuilding Notre Dame, are they? They're talking about restoring it with a modern twist. Now, restoring with a modern twist makes you wonder, what is this going to be? Is this going to be some kind of modern art, sort of anti-Christian, multicultural, multi-ethnic, multi-religious abomination?
Mm-hmm.
And I think if he goes down that route, if he has a new spire that is covered in the symbol of all religions, and it is meant to be a place that's going to embody modern French sensibilities, or modern French, you know, what can we say, modern French, you know, racial, the modern French racial or religious mix, I think that could lead to a massive, massive backlash, and it could well lead to even larger and more furious protests, because if the Yellow Vests were to seize on something like that, I think the vast majority of those who are ethnically French, those who are of the indigenous population, would join them and would sign up in even greater numbers, because mm-hmm. it would be a huge insult to the French people. Yeah,
it certainly would. Okay, so we are up on our last break. We'll be right back.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org, and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from...
Welcome back to the show. Well, we just have a few more minutes. Now, for those of in our audience who aren't in the know, every Friday, Mark Collett releases an always excellent video. And what is your topic going to be for your Friday video this week?
This week? Well, actually, this week is going to be slightly different. This week, I'm going to be doing a video on Nigel Farage and his new Brexit party, and it's going to take the format, not the usual format, but it's going to be the longer format, but something like up to an hour long, where I give a lecture followed by questions and answers, because at the moment the boundaries in British politics are being totally redrawn, and that isn't a bad thing. In fact, that's a very good thing, because you could see one or more of the historic parties in the UK being completely decimated, and that's something that nationalists should welcome. However, and there is a very, very big however, the movement which is causing the redrawing of these boundaries is led by a man called Nigel Farage. And I've got to make it very clear, we've got a lot to thank Nigel Farage for, because his sort of tireless pursuit of Brexit and his leadership of UKIP was the thing that really forced the Conservative Party to hold the referendum. However, and this is the big issue, Nigel Farage now is being built up by the media and being built up by the Labour Party here in Britain. He's being built up by these this side of the debate, the media and the left, who are all very pro-Remain. And I believe he's being built up for a reason, because I don't think the Brexit Party is a viable political movement. In fact, I think the Brexit Party, Nigel Farage's new party, is actually the sort of basically the perfect definition of, or the working definition of, a safety valve. It's a party with only one member, Nigel Farage himself, a party with only one issue, and a party that will be effective at only one election. And that election, the European election, is one which has no legislative impact within the UK. So I think what you're going to end up with here is a situation where Nigel Farage does extremely well at the European elections. When he does extremely well at the European elections, that will lead to no legislative change whatsoever within the UK. And the other parties which could do well domestically and lead to legislative change will suffer because of that. And it could well actually damage the chance for a radical or a genuinely revolutionary movement to actually create change in the long run within the UK. And I think this is a very important topic. And also, I know some of your listeners will initially say, what are you talking about? Nigel Farage, great guy. Well, Nigel Farage has repeatedly said that he would rather have third world immigrants come to Britain than European immigrants. And for the listener, I'm going to put that in a very, very simple way. He'd rather have people from former British colonies like the West Indies than he would have a Polish family. And for me personally, if you said, who would I rather be living next to, a Polish family, a white Christian Polish family, or a West Indian family, I know what my answer would be. I would rather have, if I had any immigration at all, it would be first world European immigration, where I shared, you know, racial characteristics, ethnic characteristics, and religious preferences with my neighbours, than having somebody come from the other side of the world just because at some point or another, you know, some British sailor put a little flag in a patch of land many hundreds of years ago.
Well, thank you very much for coming on the show, and everybody go to Mark Collett's channel. He's got a great video on the little boy who got thrown off the balcony in Minnesota by the black man, the little white boy. So check that out, and then tune in on Wednesday to Mark Collett's live stream with Jazz Hands McFeels. Thank you very much, Mark.
Thank you.
Okay, and I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.